This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 756, brought to you by Mack Weldon. Score big this Singles Day and get 20% off your first order when you visit MackWeldon.com/iFanboy and enter promo code iFanboy. And iFanboy listeners, just like you, who are washing their hands, wearing their masks, and please stay indoors. Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 756. I'm Josh Flanagan.
Yes.
I think I just finished my name, and then I thought you would say yours, but that goes in the face of 750 plus other episodes, so...
I was like, what happened?
And for a second, I was like, why is Connor being a dick right now?
Did Josh just have a stroke and fall over?
It was a mini. It was definitely some sort of mini neurological event. We are iFanboy. Please stay indoors. We are iFanboy, and every week we read our stack of comics, and one of us picks the one that they like the best and call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick, listener mail, all those things, if we have time for that. That's not a promise.
Yeah, no. No, we make no promises.
It will be fun. Also not a promise. We've already had fun, so maybe you had a little, so maybe we front-loaded that. But I can't promise it will be fun after this.
No.
That might have been it.
God, no.
it's just not a bet I can make. I can tell you there will be spoilers about the books we're talking about, so if you haven't read them, that's on you. Connor, despite the fact that I spent most of the day thinking I had pick of the week, Connor had pick of the week, and like repeatedly I thought, oh no, I have to do the... oh wait, Connor has the pick, and like 20 minutes later, oh man, I gotta do the... nope, Connor has... it's all messed up.
Have you been to a doctor recently?
I mean, have you been outside lately?
So I know, and I haven't either. I had a lot. I think I had 26 books this week, which was really great on a week where nothing was going on in the world that was taking my attention away from reading comics.
I did some double reads. I did some, like, I have no idea what has happened in the last five pages. I got to go back.
Yeah, I did that, I think, in one book. This week, the pick of the week is Hellblazer, Rise and Fall, Book 2 from Tom Taylor, Derek Robertson, Diego Rodriguez, Duron Bennett, Black Label from DC. This is the second of three issues. The first issue was also pick of the week from Josh. And there was a lot of really fun and good books this week, but about halfway through this one, I was like, oh, this is the pick. I mean, unless something really comes along after this that's really good. It's a really fun book, Josh, and it's drawn really well. And I know we're in love with the regular Hellblazer book, but this is a different kind of Hellblazer. Mm-hmm. You know, the other one's very sort of dark and gritty, and the art even reflects that. And this is more of a funny while also being dark Hellblazer story. And I'm not the, you know, Hellblazer expert that you are, but I really enjoyed this. And one of my favorite parts about Hellblazer stories is when, even for a moment, John drops the veneer and has a genuine moment, like in this issue where he talks to the ghost of the cop who died. You know, he gets to have a, he's alone in an alleyway, so no one gets to see the posture drop, but he gets to have like a genuine moment of feelings with people, whereas normally he's got that wall up. And so there's a lot of things going on here. One, he, you know, his new sidekick is the devil, and that was really fun. And he's got a little squad going.
Who's fucking with him? Yeah, constantly.
He can't get his bearings with the devil because the devil's always doing something to him. So he's got the devil. He's got his cop friend. He's got the ghost. He's got a little strange supernatural squad going as he investigates the murders of these powerful people in London. And it helped that it was like twice as long as a regular book. So you really got to revel in it and really sink into it. And you got, I mean, we talk about it here and there. We're all resigned to the 20-page story at this point, but when you really can sort of sink your teeth into a story and get a lot of it out, it was, you know, this was the most fun I had reading a comic all week by far.
Yeah, I think it might have been the first or second book I read, and there were several books I read this week where I was like, oh, I could make that pick of the week, and that was such a contrast to the past few picks I've had, which I didn't this week.
And just jinx yourself.
Yeah, a couple of interesting things. One is, I think, you know, we'd said last time that Tom Taylor is kind of channeling the Garth Ennis type of Hellblazer, and that everything you just described really is that too. I mean, there is it's sort of fun. It is serious and it's dark, but then there's bits of humanity. Like those are all the things that are the reason that I love Garth Ennis, and I think that he's really putting that in here. And the Derek Robertson art really backs that up. First of all, Derek Robertson always needs to have a main character who is smoking. That should be a thing. You've got Spider Jerusalem, you got John Constantine. It just works when he does that. And then at the same time, you know, when you talk about that moment in the alleyway where he's sort of, he just gets down on the ground for a second and he's got the posture. And that same thing would happen in really great moments with Spider Jerusalem. You know, Spider Jerusalem had this whole swaggering, you know, posture, and every once in a while it would drop away and you'd see the real person. And I forgot from looking at Robertson's really good at that.
I'm looking at the panel where he first sits down and the ghost says, "I'm cold, John." He says, "Yeah, I imagine you are, mate." And the facial expression, the change, he's not arrogant John Constantine at that moment. You know, he's really sad about it.
You flip the page and you see his eyes, they go back to cold, you know, when he stands up and does his little magic floopy whoops. You know, that and the sort of just the coloring, the sort of style of the whole thing, it feels like an older kind of comic when we didn't have the same kind of rules that we do now, or at least the same aesthetic that I guess is going through a lot of comics. And it is the strangest thing that we have this weird post-golden era of Hellblazer right now. It is, I don't know why this is happening.
Right.
I can't imagine anybody's buying this stuff. And
well, clearly not the main book.
No, which is, you know, but to be fair, that's super niche. I mean, it's a book about British politics and culture, you know, with a character that, I don't know, maybe because there was a TV show and because of the animated series, like,
who knows?
Constantine got a little extra life. I really don't understand who's buying what comics now. That's what I've come to realize lately. Like, I don't understand.
Tom Taylor clearly loves him because he's also becoming a main character in Deceased.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is. So, he's like the hero of one of the issues this week.
Yeah, and I didn't want to make this proclamation this week because I wanted to save it for the end of the year, but it's possible he's the character of the year.
Wow.
You know, between these two books plus Deceased, but we can discuss that at the end. Wow. The only criticism I have of this book, and it's a minor one, is, and this is a comic book wide criticism, but I feel like, and you can tell me if I'm wrong because you know this better than I do, John Constantine shouldn't be so buff.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Does he have time for exercise? Because you don't get pecs like that unless you're lifting weights.
All he does is smoke and drink. I feel like he doesn't eat. He's not going to be fat at all.
No.
Yeah, well, I think he would have like one of those like punk rocker bodies.
Yeah, that's like sinewy and skinny. That's not like you know, giant pectoral muscles. But it doesn't matter. There was one point where he's getting his ribs taped up, and I was like,
he does have a vein going down his bicep. That's probably a bit much.
Does John really?
Yeah.
Have time for?
Well, you know what? Outfit that he wears all the time. The better in shape you are, the better that outfit looks.
That's true.
But maybe he's got some magic shit he does.
That's what I was wondering, if he's magically in shape.
He's vain. So.
So there's as we talked about last time, I think you know the one of his childhood friends is back as a demon, and we find out how that's happening here, and the demon has possessed him, and so he's murdering high status people in London, and John's investigating that because his friends got involved, and here the actual devil Lucifer Morningstar shows up because the demon doing the murdering is one of his sub demons who he had sort of subjugated, and then but through John's spell work as a child, he resurrected that demon. So the Morningstar is here to bring that demon back to hell. So now he's got this white suit wearing sidekick who he plays sort of a Loki role, you know, where he's the trickster. He is constantly fucking with John. And it's really funny. John thinks they had sex, and then
there was a really cool moment, I think, in there where he goes into the bank and somebody fucks with him, and because he's, you know, he's got, first of all, you're like, well, maybe the devil's a little charming and he's kind of cool. Yeah. And then his ego goes completely out of control and he rips the guy's kidney out, and he's like, well, he's got another one. All that was interesting. But then what really sold it for me was at the end, he came back. He's like, yeah, I'm sorry about that. Like, he had a moment of humility,
right?
Which I thought was a really interesting call to make. You know, like, he kind of, like, how many people do you know in life who can't admit they made mistakes, and this is Satan? I just thought it was a really, I mean, it's a quote-unquote humanizing moment, I thought.
Right. There's a lot of laugh-out-loud moments. The kid is possessed by the devil. He's a demon. The kid, again, who's John's childhood friend, is not a kid. He's basically just a skin suit. And so at one point, he confronts John on the street, and John kicks him in the balls.
Oh, yeah.
So a bunch of
cut that one out for a panel of the week.
Guys who were just randomly playing soccer in the background, which is kind of like, all right, go to beat him up because he just kicked a kid. But it was funny. Mm-hmm. again, the art's terrific. And it's you know, if you've never read Constantine before, you could totally read this book and
sure. And
enjoy it. It's a really great book.
This is like Dangerous Habits, which is that first Garth Ennis story. You could read that having never read Constantine. In fact, that might have been the first one. No, that wasn't the first one I read. But you could, though. And I think, yeah, that's a really good point. It's good comments.
I'm happy to see Derek Robertson. I know he does things here and there, and he's got the TV show Boys and what have you, but it's nice to see him doing like some sustained, you know, panel to panel, page to page comic work.
That fits him really well, too. Like, he's...
It's perfect for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone's a little dirty. Everyone's a little stubbly. You know, everyone's smoking. They're leaning into the smoking.
Yeah.
He always has a cigarette.
He's so good at it. I mean, but he should. Like, John should always have that. I hate smoking. But, you know, you put it where you... It's like Keith Richards has to have a cigarette. So does John Constantine.
It's also part of the story, right? He gets lung cancer. Like, that's...
Yeah.
That's... Like, he... It's not... That's just for looks.
One of Garth Ennis's most brilliant strokes. That's a devil story too, actually.
It's part of his character arc, so makes sense. It's the opposite of the TV show where they weren't allowed to show him smoking. And
a little stupid short jacket.
But occasionally he would be stubbing a cigarette out as the scene cut to him. Ugh. At least as a nod to the fact that he was just smoking. Anyway, that was a terrific issue. Hellblazer Rise and Fall Book 2 from Black Label, DC's Vertigo, really. I'm very curious, Josh, what you thought of Thor number 9, Donnie Cates, Nick Klein, Matt Wilson, Joseph Vino. This is the first issue of Prey. And the last issue, was it the last issue of the pick of the week?
I don't know.
It was definitely in the discussion.
Yep.
That was where it ended with Thor deciding he needed to reacquaint himself with his alter ego, Dr. Donald Blake.
Gotta say, in terms of a sort of twist on a story, so basically what you do is when you come in here, you have this idea that, well, yeah, where does Donald Blake go when he's not when Thor isn't him.
So that's a side question I really need to ask you about, because you've read slightly more Thor comics than I did in the 80s, 90s.
I think it's just something they never approached.
But I thought that Thor became Donald Blake, not that they were two different people. Because the explanation is Odin created this situation so that Thor could learn humility.
Mm-hmm.
And now, how would he learn humility if he wasn't actually Donald Blake? If he was just switching places with Donald Blake, he's still just Thor in this fantasy world.
I think it was always sort of vague. And I think that Cates is sort of digging into, well, wait a minute, what does this really mean? But I did get the sense they were kind of two different people. Like, they did this with Jane Foster when she went into the Thor persona. Like, she kind of had memories about it, but it wasn't as if she was the same person. I don't know. It's a little strange. And if you want to compare this to the Norse mythology book that was happening over at Dark Horse, like, all that stuff's a little weird. Like, it's just...
Yeah, no, I get it. It's just, to me, it felt like they were writing themselves into a corner, because the whole beginning of this issue is explaining the Donald Blake setup for people who weren't reading comics in 1988, because he really hasn't been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And so the idea is, you know, Odin was grooming Thor for leadership, and Thor was an arrogant young god, and so he created this situation where Thor, you know, struck his hammer, and then Donald Blake took his place. And I thought he just was sort of like, as a kid, I thought he was, you know, he was Donald Blake. It was a secret identity.
I think he wasn't driving the bus.
Right, but he was still sort of there. Whereas here, the idea is Donald Blake, when Thor is Thor, Donald Blake is basically living in Pleasantville, you know, this sort of 1950s ideal suburb. And then
it's Donald Walk.
When Thor strikes his hammer, Thor goes to Pleasantville, and Donald Blake comes to Earth or Midgard or Asgard or wherever Thor is. And so then I thought, well, then how is Thor learning anything if he's just hanging out in the suburb, this fake suburb, while Donald Blake is there? Like, it doesn't make any sense. But
I think that's not exactly... They don't switch places. Blake goes there when Thor's Thor.
Because when he strikes his hammer to bring back Donald Blake, he goes to the suburb in this issue.
Oh, well, maybe that was like a little... All right.
I got that caught up in my head while reading this, and it sort of kept me from really enjoying it, because I was like, none of this makes any sense. The other problem I had is I really liked this issue in terms of, like, on its own pure storytelling. The art's terrific. The story was really well taught. I just don't know if I liked what happened in it.
I think there was... I think
I'm not supposed to like it, but
that's
a lot like
the Tom King Batman, I think, which is sort of the same. I think I kind of had the same thought. Well, no, I enjoyed it, but I think that I spent more time sort of appreciating, like, well, this is a good setup for a story. You know, it's like when something makes you laugh as opposed to something that makes you say, that was very funny. You know, like, you can sort of acknowledge that something is clever, but it's not making you guffaw.
I mean, the idea here is that, so again, Thor's decided he needs to bring back Donald Blake's personality, or Donald Blake, because, you know, he's losing his touch with the hammer. It's growing heavier for him. We even though we just did that story.
And
then we find out Donald Blake, when he goes to the suburb, he sort of, time has no meaning. He doesn't know how long he's there. He's just sort of living there. And we find out here that something happened, and he became self-aware while in the suburb. And so when Thor changes places with him, he finds this, like, hellscape that everyone's been murdered. There's, like, crazy messages scrawled in blood everywhere. The big snake creature that is constantly around the world tree that is set up in the beginning, that creature's dead. And then we see Donald Blake in the present, who is, like, gone totally crazy with the giant beard and hair, and he's got his weapons, and he's gone mad. And I was like, oh, don't make Donald Blake into a bad guy. That was my problem with it.
No, I get that. I think it's fine, but, you know, if you're going with the hubris of the gods, it's pretty good.
I get it.
You know, I think
again,
that's...
I can't make a qualitative problem with the book. The book was really well made, and it was suspenseful, and it was interesting, and the art was terrific. Beautiful. But I was like, we got to ruin Donald Blake now.
But you know what? We've had one swerve. You know, it was like, I'm going to go back to this Donald Blake thing. And we're like, all right, cool. Secret identity for Thor again. And then, you know, the next issue is not so fast. You know, right. there could be other swerves in mind. I think that the thing happened at the end where when he bangs the hammer and ends up there, that didn't work how it was supposed to. So I don't think it would have always put Thor into that world. I think that because Blake went mad, it fucked things up. Or maybe he just went to check it out. Like, Thor knew about it. He's like, let's, you know. Like, I feel like that wasn't typical. And that was the first clue that something's going wrong. Obviously, it was the first clue that something's going wrong.
The line is, it's been years since Thor and the brilliant surgeon Donald Blake have traded places. So it's like, oh, so, you know, I don't know.
I like the commitment, though. I really love the total commitment to the fact that he went insane.
Yeah.
And killed the shit out of everybody. There was a riding mower parked on a dude's head. I mean, like, there is a poodle eating someone's guts. Like,
there's a lot of people to kill.
Yeah, he went full on, and I kind of appreciate that. And then he looks like angry Aquaman at the end of it.
So yeah, I had complicated feelings about this issue.
That's fair. I think it was I think the point being that it was well done, and I think it was thoughtful. Whether you enjoy it is a different thing, and I think that maybe it's too early to tell for you. I'm going with it.
Yeah, I'm not saying I don't like. I'm uncomfortable, and well, again, that might be the point of it, and that's totally fine. I'm not criticizing it for that. I'm just like, It was the bigger criticism for me was I don't understand the mechanics of Donald Blake Thor anymore, and I thought I did, and now it's confusing and it doesn't make sense in the story.
I mean, I was 11, so who knows? Like, I don't know when the last time I actually read one of those stories. I just know that I liked it then because Thor had a secret identity. Right. And it was a little weird, and I always liked it when it was like a little, like, not exactly clear. It wasn't exactly like Superman takes off his glasses and then he becomes that. It was different. It was weirder than that.
Did you read U.S. Agent number one?
I tried to. I mean, I did. But
interesting. Christopher Priest, George DeJounte, Carl Story, Matt Miller, Josepino. And so it's interesting is that I thought this was fun. I love George DeJounte's art.
The art was wonderful.
But I think if you're of a certain age, the age that Josh and I are, you have a natural aversion to John Walker. Like for me, he can't be a hero to me. And so
I don't feel that way.
See, I do because, you know, as a kid, he was the evil Captain America.
He wasn't evil. Like he
was.
He got there eventually, but that wasn't necessarily his fault. He was a good dude. And I read those stories at the time, the Grunewalds, and I don't remember where he went bad, but he isn't considered that way now because he basically did Captain America quit or was he fired?
That's when he went. That's when he was the captain.
Yeah. Right. And so this was his uniform first. Right. The original U.S. agent. I think, yeah, when he quit. And so he said, I'm not going to work for the government anymore. And he got the really cool U.S. agent outfit. And when I was 10 or 11 or whatever, I was like, that is the coolest fucking outfit I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
First of all. And then Walker and the other Bucky were brought in, drawn by the amazing Kieran Dwyer back then. God, right. I can look at those issues right now and they're beautiful. They were hired by the government, you know, to be the new Captain America and Bucky. So they weren't bad guys. And then at some point, I think Walker went insane.
Well, the thing is, he was jingoist Cap. He was, you know, he wasn't like a bad guy in the sense that he was super villain, but he was like over the top Captain America in the same way we see him here, where he's a little racist. He's a little, bit of an asshole.
Well, that has a little to do, I think, with you know, like the story that Priest, who's no longer Christopher Priest, by the way, he's just listed by his single name Priest. You know, like that's an interpretation of it, but like I actually read the U.S. Agent miniseries that Mark Grunewald did, like in the last year. There was like a postscript to that, and it's not portrayed that way originally, which is why maybe I think of him this way. Like he's over his head. He is from the South. He is sort of a bit more of a fundamentalist, but he wasn't a bad guy. He was over his head, and he was trying to do more than he was capable of, and, you know, there was hubris in that. I've used that word twice now. I may it again. And then he was also on the West Coast Avengers for a while. So, I think the idea was that he's not Cap. And
he's like the Guy Gardner of the Marvel Universe.
There you go. I'd say that's
exactly sort of what he is. In the same way that you hated Guy Gardner, you know, yeah. It's I liked this issue.
I was just lost the whole time. I really didn't. I wasn't sure what was happening. I feel like it. You know, the same thing. Like it took up. It like took off from a place that I don't remember. So I wasn't really sure what my footing was. And then I didn't get who the Chinese guy was. I didn't get.
He's not Chinese.
Oh, that's right. Amazing. No, I'm sorry. He's not Chinese. He's Japanese. I think he was. He says his name at some point. But Watanabe.
His name is Japanese. He might be Vietnamese. It doesn't really matter. The joke is that Walker doesn't care. Just call him Chinese because he's that's who.
I get that. He's a good old boy. Yeah. It's fine. I don't know who his sister is. I think he's
actually Korean. Actually, he was smuggled over the DMZ.
You're right. I remember that. He's Asian, and they called him Chinese, and I got wrapped right up in it like a jerk. I wasn't sure what the footing was for the story. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here. It's John Walker is paranoid. He thinks that some agency's got to get him. He doesn't know which one it is, so he's been constantly kidnapping pizza delivery boys because he's heard that the bomb is coming in a pizza box, and so he ends up trying to kidnap the wrong pizza boy, who's sort of this middle-aged Korean guy who is much better at tactics than he is, and they go on a little adventure. I mean, I don't know the big story here. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's happening. I enjoyed their dynamic.
That's true.
I enjoyed the art a lot.
I like the things that happen. I like the art. I love that page where the guy comes to the door to deliver the pizza, and the sort of gun comes out, and it's that 9-panel grid. And then there's just a way over the top fight where where Walker gets thrown through a wall, and then they eat pizza and watch TV for a bit. Like, it was all kind of wacky.
It was funny,
but in terms of the plot, like, I loved how his shield was wrecked immediately. Like, he had a junk shield, you know. But other what's the plot? I'm not really sure.
The plot and the flashbacks to his sister didn't really mean anything to me. But I had fun reading it. Like, I didn't love it, and it wasn't like a pick of the week contender, but I was like, oh, well, that was fun.
I was very excited to see it. I was like, oh, well, this is a story. Walker was also in, he was in Thunderbolts. He took over the prison after Luke Cage left being the warden of the prison. And that was kind of fun, too. I thought he was paralyzed then, like, or he was missing his legs or something. He was in a wheelchair, I think.
It doesn't matter, Josh.
I know. I just...
Listen, I'll never accept John Walker or like him.
Okay.
He was a usurper.
Yeah, but he knew he wasn't Captain America, too. I want to go back and read those stories. I have those issues somewhere.
I hated him.
Really?
Yeah, of course. He took over. He tried to take Cap's job.
No, he was given Cap's job.
It doesn't matter. As a kid, it doesn't matter. The distinction is
if
not...
Captain America got to go do his thing. I just like the uniform, I think.
Black Widow number 3. Black Widow number 3, Kelly Thompson, Elena Casagrande, Jordi Belair, Corey Pettit. I've been really loving this series, and we've been talking a lot on the show about Marvel, the state of Marvel, you know, the big books, the big marquee books, maybe not necessarily doing it for us, but I think Marvel's really creative strength, and my personal enjoyment's happening on the fringes. And it's weird to say, like, Black Widow is a fringe book, and...
Well.
Even U.S. Agent, and I would even say Fantastic Four is a fringe book at this point because they're not popular. But
well, they're not in the movies. Right. And it's so the thing is, like, Black Widow is in the movies, but as a character in Marvel Universe comics, like, she's a fringe character. I mean,
Captain Marvel is a great book. Like, all these sort of not the marquees, you know. Mm-hmm. Not, I think that's where Marvel's strength is right now, and I really have been enjoying this Black Widow series. Where she's lost her memory because a bunch of her old villains have taken it away from her, and they've set up this fake life for her for reasons that they are arguing about in their little shadowy red room cabal. While
there's a lot of that happening in comics lately, have you noticed? Like, there's a lot of back rooms with people who aren't quite qualified who are just arguing with each other.
And while Bucky and Hawkeye watch from afar, trying to decide if they should intervene or not, knowing that this is not her life, even if she's happy in it. I just think it's an interesting dynamic. It's fun. The art from Elena Casagrande is terrific. And here, this is the important issue where she has realized things are not as they should be. And also, one of the villains makes a dumb move against her family. And so that leads to her with a fantastic kitchen fight with a bunch of thugs. And I just think this book's totally fun.
This is why actual conspiracies don't happen, because people have too much ego and they're stupid.
Right.
Like, it just doesn't work that way. I finished this book and I thought, wow, that was really good. I was really just, you know, from tip to tail, really, you know, Elena Casagrande, just really like beautiful fight sequences. And I just like the sort of bold thickness of her lines. And then Jordi Belair comes in and colors it. And, you know, there's none of that. It looks like animation cells.
Yeah.
You know, and this weirdness that's going on, and the fact that, you know, Yelena, what's her name, come, you know, and it's really funny, like, they can't tell if she's a good guy or a bad guy, and because she's both, and that's really interesting, too. You know, it's a really good sort of spy story, and because of the fact that we've seen the fake baby husband thing before, but there's sure. stakes to it, and, you know, because this character is who she is, there's a lot of, you know, what could have been with her.
And they can't just pull her out because the baby,
right?
Yelena, the other Black Widow, who was going to be in the movie that would have been out at the same time as this book, tested the baby's DNA because she's posing as the babysitter, and it's actually Natasha's baby, even though it's impossible because she's only been missing for 4 months, and the baby's, I mean, alive. Yeah. So what does that mean? Is it some sort of grown clone, and is that going to be a problem when they try to pull her out? And it's there's a lot of layers here, and it's a lot of fun.
That fight in the house. Digital reader page 14, there's like a double page spread with, you know, yep. like no panels, but lots of act. That's amazing. That's a beautiful bit of work. And it's got those little insets like, who's that guy who does them? He did Green Arrow and then.
Yeah. That guy.
Yeah. Where is he?
If you ask a direct question, then it'll immediately leave the brain.
No, I know that. But so that artist, I want to say it's like an Italian name or whatever.
Yeah.
He started doing that. I think, who's the other guy who does that? David Aja does that.
David Aja does do that.
Yeah. Well, so just like, it's sort of taking in all of those influences and making something really cool out of it that isn't just a straight, you know, ripoff.
I love that as a kid, that those panels where you saw the character in multiple poses through movement and action. That's what you
and
have
I
here.
Always love
the kitchen.
Yeah, I loved that she's mostly a black shape. I think Miller did that a lot. Where, like, basically you just get, there's no outlines anymore. There's a little in this, but,
Right.
I remember that happening a lot when I was a kid, too, in comics, where you just sort of got, you know, the external overall shape, but not really anything in the middle to show that sort of action. It's really beautiful.
Right. Yeah, I enjoy, this is another great, really fun issue. There's a lot of that for Marvel this week. It was a strong Marvel week.
Yeah, it was. It absolutely was.
Hey, guys, if you didn't know, Singles Day is this Wednesday. Woo! Josh, were you aware that Singles Day was this Wednesday?
I'm not even aware of what being single means.
I you did were, not know this.
You were a heck of a single person. You were very good
at
that.
Yeah, but I didn't even know that we had a day back then. I thought every day was
a day. I thought you were the captain of Singles Day.
I would have had a little yacht cap on. I would have been out there. But apparently it's a day now, and it's this Wednesday. That's cool. I wasn't familiar with the holiday, but it's exactly what it sounds like, a celebration of being single, which, I feel like is every day. But
you haven't been married that long, and I think she listens to the show, so you might want to tread lightly, pal.
I'm just saying, when you're single, anyway, I'm going to stop before I get in trouble. So do it big and treat yourself to a killer deal from Mack Weldon. Whatever men's basics you need, Mack Weldon has you covered for unmatched comfort and fit. Josh and I, We've been talking about this for years. We're big Mack Weldon fans. Josh, are you rocking anything currently at the moment?
Of course I am.
Well, of course I am. All your underwear needs are Mack Weldon at this point.
It is always a part of my. Mack Weldon is with me every day. That's what's happening. Yeah.
You know, you talked about a couple of times ago how the winter was coming and it was almost sweatpant weather.
Yeah.
Well, that happened here in L.A. We've gotten some cool weather. And the other day I was like, I believe it's sweatpant weather. And I pulled them out like a sword, you know, from my drawer.
Shing.
Held them up.
It should be noted, they're not stiff like a sword. They're comfortable and pliant and soft.
But it was with the ceremony of a
right.
sword pull.
Yes, I understand.
And put them on. I had a great day in my Mack Weldon sweatpants. They're really comfortable. I've had them now for years. They're held up. They're in great shape. And they've got nice pockets with zippers, which is great for sweatpants.
Here's the thing about being single. You know, you might not want to be seen in your sweatpants, but not so with the Mack Weldon stuff. They will say, boy, if you're going to wear sweatpants, that's a classy way to go about it, young man. How would you like to go on a second or third date, depending on when they came over?
So Mack Weldon is all about men's essentials, socks, shirts, hoodies, underwear, polos, active shorts. Mack Weldon promises comfort and a consistent fit. They've got versatility. They look great. They feel great from working out to going out, which is important for Singles Day. Going to work or on a date, all those things will one day return to life. And when they do, Mack Weldon's got your back. Technology. Mack Weldon's all about technology and finding ways to innovate with clothing. Wide range of customized fabrics that can keep up with you no matter what your day looks like. Got the 18-hour, got the silver, got the Air Knit X, got the dry knit, got the warm knit. They're all about the knits.
I've several of those, and really they really work for the specific purpose. The Air Knits, fantastic in the summer. I got a marketing email from them just because that's what people get, and they have a new flannel shirt is very light and has some insulation, and it looked good, and I was like, ooh, that's my jam right there.
This is the fans we are, Josh. Send me a marketing email.
I did.
Look at this shirt.
And I did not do that because it was a thing we would talk about here. That was just an organic moment of things. Right. I'm gonna offer. They haven't put this term up here, but I'm gonna go ahead and say that this is what they should build a marketing campaign around.
Okay.
It that all has the proper amount of snugness.
Mm.
It's the right amount of snug. Just snug.
Supports without constraining.
Yes, exactly. It's important.
And
it maintains the snugness.
It doesn't stretch out.
Yeah, like over time, it they're still useful. Like it's I've had others, and it is not the case.
Right. Are we talking still about underwear?
Like singles. Yeah.
That's when you know you got to settle down. Is when you find the one that supports the snugness.
Let's move along. How about the Weldon Blue loyalty program, Connor?
That's great. Free. It's a totally free loyalty program. Level 1 gets you free shipping for life. Once you reach level 2 by spending $200, you get 20% off every order for the next year, which is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And their guarantee for Mack Weldon is they want you to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep it and they'll still refund you, no questions asked. It's almost like there's no reason not to give it a try, because if you don't like it, they'll give you your money back. And then you got a pair of underwear.
You're going to go, that is the right amount of snugness. He wasn't kidding. And exactly. Then you're going to feel weird because I was talking to you about snugness and you're anyway.
So here's what you got to do. Score big this Singles Day, which is Wednesday, November 11th, and get 20% off your first order when you visit MackWeldon.com/iFanboy and enter promo code iFanboy at checkout. That's MackWeldon.com/iFanboy, promo code iFanboy for 20% off. Mack Weldon, reinventing men's basics. Singles Day.
Singles Day.
Singles Day. All right. Fair enough.
Were you aware there was a new Sweet Tooth book coming?
I think I had heard about it.
Because I thought, when I saw it, I was like, oh, this must be some kind of reprint. You know how Marvel does those, like, reprinty issues? I thought, well, this is weird. And then I was like, I think this is new.
Yes, Sweet Tooth, the Return, Book 1 from Black Label, a.k.a. Vertigo, from Jeff Lemire, Jose Villarubia, and Steve Wands. Is a return to Sweet Tooth, the seminal Vertigo series from Jeff Lemire, and a book we were big fans of back at the time. So this is a return. It's not, you know, it's not like American Vampire coming back, because American Vampire sort of didn't end. It just sort of stopped, whereas Sweet Tooth ended. It was like a full story arc. So one I went back and I actually looked up the ending of Sweet Tooth.
That would have been a good idea for me.
But it didn't really matter, because the first page here says 300 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes on to have the same characters.
I have no idea.
Yeah, this is a 6-issue miniseries. Uh-huh. And it was regular length, which is unusual for Black Label. Usually Black Label's 3 issues in double length, but this is 6 issues in regular length. Same amount of pages in the end. what you got here kind of is almost a variation on the first issue of Sweet Tooth, really, where you got a kid with horns living in the woods. He's being protected by his overprotective guardian, and then he decides he wants to break out into the larger world, which is very similar to the first issue of the main book. Is it the same kid with horns?
Looks like him, but
is that Jeopard at the end? Looks like him. Would make sense 300 years later. Why isn't this happening? Why is there this society underground that apparently he's living in, as opposed to the real woods? None of these questions are answered in these first 20 pages, but I guess I'll read the whole thing. I read the whole first of series, and I liked it a lot. But this one didn't grab me out of the gate.
This one didn't grab me at all. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll come around or whatever, but I really did. You looked up something, but I didn't remember enough about. I kind of remember how it ended, but not enough to make any connections between this.
Well,
and
as
that.
It turned out, none of it mattered.
Right. Well, that's the point. So then this just felt like they were telling the same story again, and it wasn't as compelling. Again, not to say it wouldn't, but as a sort of single issue to sort of grab me into a new thing. You know, the final page reveal of the guy who looks like Jeopard, or what, you know, end of the story, you know, okay. I would like it to be good, but I would like to give me something new. Give me something else, you know,
I'm looking for a reason.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
That's what I'll be looking for this, over this six issues, is why are we doing this?
Right.
You've only got six issues here, so you're basically telling a short story. So what is the purpose? We can't be building this giant world like you did with the first time. It was like, what, like 60 issues or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, I also read Sweet Tooth and Trades, so it's a very different reading experience for me to read just 20 pages of the story. But I'm just curious as to why we're doing this.
I mean, yeah, but I think we're both willing to give the guy the benefit of the doubt. And also, like, if you look at it, it's nothing has changed. Like the art is still the art, and the coloring is the same, and you know, so you don't have to like get used to another person drawing it or whatever. Like, it is Sweet Tooth. There's no doubt about it. Now, what are you going to give me that you didn't already give me?
Right. Why are we back?
Yeah.
I haven't read press on it. I don't know if he's like, I had this great idea, but you know. He's certainly not lacking for work.
No. He's in the time that we've been recording the show, he's released 3 Black Hammer series.
Right. So I'm curious to see what's going on here. I'm not ready to write it off, even though I didn't really love the first issue.
Yeah, that's fair. Me too. So that Texas Blood, I don't have a lot on it. Number 5 issue came out, and I was kind of. It starts very violently. Like, literally, a guy is fantasizing about, you know, drowning in a river of blood, or you know, right, whatever. And I was like, wait, is this the same guy?
Right.
Like, there was a very quick turn that took place between the issues, and I found that jarring because it took me a minute to get my bearings, and then I realized, like, no, this is the same guy, but it was really dark and really fast, and I don't mind what happened with the story, but I felt like it jumped forward a lot since the last issue.
I'm going to say something slightly controversial.
Go for it.
I think this is a good book. I don't think it's a well-written book.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy it, and I like this character, and I'm giving it probably a lot of leeway because it's a straight-up crime book, mm-hmm. and there's not a lot of those out there, and I'm desperate for them, but I don't necessarily think it's a well-written book. I think it's an adequately written book.
I think the dialogue is extremely strong. I think it's a really good, like, the voices of the characters, the sheriff, the other people around there. I think the dialogue is really, really strong, and that might mask some of the plotting and pacing that a new writer needs to learn. By the way, this is exactly how I characterize all of my writing too. Like, I could mask a lot with dialogue and stuff like that. And when you look back at people like Bendis, they had really strong dialogue, but on top of it, he had really strong dialogue, but then on top of it, you know, like, he had great pacing in plots, which I think this might be missing so far.
We had a lot of build up to this guy's girlfriend showing up, and then she shows up, and then she's just dealt with and leaves. Like, it was like, what was the point of any of that?
That was, yeah.
I'm not. It's not a huge criticism. I mean, I do enjoy it, and when it comes out, I'm very happy to read it. And I did.
Me too.
Enjoy reading it, but I just finished it. And I was like, I don't know that this book is that well written.
Well, we don't know that the girlfriend is gone for good. That I mean, sure. That would be a huge mistake if she just took off there, but or just as an example of like how he fell, you know. I don't know. I don't know what to expect. I think that you're right. I think there are growing pains. I think this is a sort of learning process. But you know, is a first sort of comic to put out. It's pretty strong.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad book. Yeah. I just think it's there's some cracks.
Sure, absolutely, I agree. Need some seasoning.
So Josh and I both checked out Red Atlantis number one from Aftershock Comics, written by Stephanie Phillips, who's quickly turning into a really interesting writer, with art by Robert Carey and colors by Rosh and letters by Troy Petery. I like Petery.
Okay. I bet he
does. I mean, it's not my choice, but it's fun to say. Petery.
Go on.
Say it.
Petery.
See? Fun. So I didn't know anything about this book at all. I just saw the cover. It's got the Kremlin and the White House and the Russian star and a bunch of people running, or one person running and a bunch of people's faces. So I think we saw it's a crime, a raw, brutal thriller from tomorrow's headlines. Oh, we'll give it a shot.
I literally just saw Stephanie Phillips' name and I said, hey, you know what? This has been some good stuff lately. Let's give it another shot. And then I found out at the end that it's like a adaptation of some other, it's a film pitch. Yeah. It's a film pitch by some Russians, and I didn't really enjoy it as I was reading it. And then I got to the end and I saw that part and I was like, oh, that's why this isn't her story. Yeah. No, and it was glaringly obvious.
She's right. She's just adapting a pitch.
And this isn't anything against her. Take the work. Take the paid work. Yeah. Get your name on as many things as possible. But it is missing that core, I think, that I've come to like in her writing. And it was $5 for 20 pages, and that's stupid.
Yeah. There's a lot of back matter, and a preview doesn't make up for the $5.
Back matter and that stuff is not something I'm going to pay for. That's on you.
I also didn't think the art was that good. I thought
okay.
I'm looking for the artist's name. Robert Carey is better at characters' faces than talking. When it came to action-y stuff, it was a lot less good for me. But it wasn't bad. It just was like there'd be an interesting talking scene, and that was good. And then there was a fight in the park, and I was like, oh, this is not great.
I feel like I used to read, just as a matter of course, more things that were very obviously film pitches. Or TV pitches.
Yeah, there was a while that Image where it was was it 10 years ago?
Something like
it
that.
It might have been 10 years ago, 15 years ago, where it was clearly there was a string of film pitches out of Image. And a couple of them got optioned, and those guys never wrote another comic. And
yes. And I think I got very aware of that. And so like I avoided it, and I just didn't see it coming.
Well, I actually read a little bit of the interview in the back. I couldn't help myself. I glanced over it and I saw, okay, well, the guy who came up with the story is an ex-KGB/FSB agent. And I was like, well, that's interesting. So let me just glance at this. And his whole thing was like, spy stories and movies, they're always completely wrong. And so I wanted to do a different kind of spy story. And I was like, well, you didn't, though. It's the same.
I know.
I mean, it opens up with almost a supernatural situation. It's probably technological, but it comes off as supernatural, where these people are voting. It's voting day. It was timely. It came out on the week of voting day in America, and there's voting in the story. And there's a bunch of like.
By the way, that as a timing tie-in, that doesn't work for me at all. I really want to read about controversy and violence at the polls this week. Are you serious that you thought that was a good idea?
So a bunch of people just start attacking each other randomly after their phones buzz them, and they get the anti-life equation in them.
Exactly.
It's exactly from Deceased. And so they all start fighting each other and beating each other and killing each other. And then there's some sort of tie-in to this college student, and there's two FBI agents, and there's a Houston detective. There's a Houston cop who is not at all like any cops in Houston I ever met. This guy comes off like a small-town bumpkin. you know, chief of police in
Houston. It's a large metropolitan area.
Houston is on some days, the third largest city in America, and it's the most racially and ethnically diverse city in America as well. And this guy comes off like he's running like a Mayberry. Mm-hmm. So that was a little, I just have spent a lot of time in Houston, but that didn't ring true for me. And then the story was fine. It was really short. And again, I read the interview. I was like, but what is this book? So,
I mean, that's the same pitch for the Americans. Like, the dude was CIA and this is what it is. But that was better.
Apparently, Stephanie Phillips has a very solid background in martial arts, and she choreographed the fight scenes with 99.9% authenticity.
See, she's fascinating. I'm a fan. Like, I don't put this on her.
Yeah, I was bummed because I was like, oh, well, maybe it'll be an awesome, you know, spy story.
I agree.
That'll be cool because she's been doing lots of different genres.
Yeah,
and it just wasn't.
Well, what are you gonna do?
I just want to mention real quickly, Young Justice 20 was the final issue. Brian Bendis, David Walker, co-writer Scott Godlewski was the artist, and you know, the Bendis experiment at Image at DC.
You'll get there
eventually. It's early. Is what it is. We've been enjoying a lot of it. Some of it hasn't worked. Clearly, hasn't moved the needle in the culture or the sales charts, but I really enjoyed this Young Justice book. It was a team book. That was the one thing, you know, Superman's not a team book. Legion of Superheroes is in some ways the ultimate team, but he's not writing it that way because there's just too many characters. But this is very much in his Avengers wheelhouse. You know, there's a group of six or seven characters. They all bounce off each other with dialogue. They're all, a lot of them are old friends, so you get that kind of relationship. There's new characters who are new to the hero game. And they just been sort of hanging out. We've been hanging out with them through various adventures, and this is a wrap-up issue where they get their base back from Avengers, from Justice League Mountain, and Red Tornado shows up. He's sort of their mentor, and John Stewart shows up to get back the technology that the Teen Lanterns have been using to hack the power battery on Oa. And it's just it was nothing of consequence really happened because it was the final issue wrap-up, and they just sort of got to hang out at the base, and it was fun. I really liked this book a lot. I'm bummed it's over.
Well, I didn't read it, so that's my fault.
That's fine. No, that's fine.
I think I read the first issue.
Yeah. It's not, you know, a big Young Justice fan, so I understand.
Yeah.
So those are the books we're going to talk about. We could have talked about more. It was a big week, but we have the patron pick to talk about, patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, they voted overwhelmingly for crossover number one from Image Comics, Donnie Cates, Jeff Shaw, Del Cuniff, John J. Hill. Was this on your radar? Were you going to read it without the patron pick vote?
I mean, I probably would have.
Oh, Mark Waid on story edits.
Well.
I didn't notice that before.
I mean, yeah, I mean, like, I wasn't aware of it before you mentioned it, but I don't usually look at things before I sort of start to pick out which books I'm going to read anyway, but I would have totally read this.
I knew this was coming. I knew that he had a bit, that Donnie Cates had a big Image book coming.
Honestly, the most surprising thing about this was the bit at the end. I was like, oh, you have like a whole empire. Like, he has a bunch of new Image books coming out at the same time he's running all this stuff at Marvel. I don't know if some of that works ending or what. He's got two podcasts that he does. Like, it's a whole, he's got a whole Donnie Cates brand. And I don't know. He is one of the most genuinely enthusiastic and energetic people I know.
Right.
Like, he, I remember when I first sort of saw him on the scene and I saw how, like, pumped, I'm making air quotes, you know, he seemed to be about everything, and I was like, oh, come on. And then, you know, like, I talked to him, I met him, I was like, oh no, he's really like that, right? You know, like, he's just super happy and excited, and he's got a lot of ideas, and it's kind of cool to see. But so let's you know, narrow in on this book. Right now, if you were to ask me to tell you what the premise was, I don't know that I could do it
right. Well, so first of all, I really like the cover.
Yeah,
it's a kid reading a comic, this comic. It's a very meta, and his face is getting blown off. And, you know, that's sort of the metaphor for
his. He's smiling, though, kid. And that's the...
Right, because he's getting his face blown off by a comic.
Yep.
Cool. So the idea here is that one day, is it outside of Denver, or is it Denver itself? I think it is Denver itself, Denver, Colorado, in 2017. All of the superheroes from Marvel and DC appear in a town, suddenly real and alive in the midst of a giant battle, in the midst of a giant crossover. one might say, and end up destroying the town, causing lots of death. And one of the heroes puts a protective force field over the town to trap them inside. Now we jump 3 years later, and comic fandom is looked down upon. It, you know, there's only one comic store left in Provo, Utah, where the story takes place. It's the only comic store that sells pre-event comics, event meaning the thing that happened in Denver. And, you know, there's a girl walking on the street. She's got a Domino mask on. The guy throws a bottle at her. And she works at the comic store. There's a sign that says, "God hates masks," on like a billboard. And then there's you know, protesters outside the comic store. So it becomes this whole thing about comic fandom. And then at the end, the big reveal, and this is a spoiler if you haven't read the book, is that in the comic store on this day, there's a little girl with a hoodie on, and it's revealed that she's a character, one of the characters from the comics who has escaped the bubble. She's got Dot Pitch face. And it freaks out everybody, and they run out, and then a religious zealot throws a Molotov cocktail through the window and burns the comic store down.
Yeah.
And then it's revealed that the person who helped the girl escape the bubble may or may not be Superman. So I liked it. Again, much like when I was reading
Thor,
also by Donny Cates, which I didn't.
I did. When you were talking about that book, I was like, I'm going to have the same thing.
All the mechanics were in the back of my head, and I couldn't wash them away to just enjoy the book. And I was like, well, how are you going to do this if all these characters are Marvel and DC characters? Well, and
certainly towing a legal line there. It's not like he doesn't understand how that works.
And it's not like it's not. I mean, Mark Waid did it with, you know, Irredeemable at the end. Sure. It's like you can certainly.
But he's naming
honor these characters and mention them, and you can't show them. And you obviously, when you see the big fight in Denver, the double page spread, none of those characters are Marvel or DC characters. But you know, that was just a minor thing in the back of my head. I was like, how are they going to do this?
Well, a couple things. You know, like he tells a little story in the back. Ugh, I'm tired of doing this, but it is interesting in this case. And I think he told me this on the Talksplode that we did. Where he got really, really ill and ended up in the hospital and nearly died. And, you know, after that, he was thinking about death. And then the last year he didn't explain this one, but he got really ill. He was in the hospital again. And after that, he's like, I'm going to be happy about life or whatever. And so he's trying to do this thing, which is clearly celebrating comics. In fact, he was also a retailer. Like he managed stores for quite a while. Like he understands comic book retailing, and so like when they go into that comic shop, I'm like, who's writing this from a actual perspective of somebody who knows something? And I applaud all of the ideas behind that. I applaud the idea behind the cover. I think that's I see what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a little too on the nose for me to get behind.
The book itself?
Yeah, I mean, like. I don't really need a book celebrating superheroes and comic books because I can do that through the superhero comic books that I read that make me feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. Like kind of when I come to, you know, to an Image comic or somebody like these guys are already doing superhero comics over there. So, you know, you can celebrate it that way. It's like a rock song about really great rock songs. And it can work. It can absolutely work, but it's tough. I'm skeptical from the get go. And again, what you said is right. Like it's a really well done book. And I think like there's a little device that he has where he's sort of explaining what's going on, and then he says, "But that's not what this story is about." And I like that because it brings you along. Like you need to know this, but this isn't the thing you need to remember yet. Like this is the. And so, because you could easily go, oh, this is what the story is. And that's not it.
It's the Stan Lee thing where the comic talks to you.
Yeah, but it also just keeps you on a track and lets you know where to put your attention to. And I, again, I like that as a device. I think it's very effective. I think he's got an enormous amount of skill going into this. But as a sort of overall premise, if you told me about it, I don't know that I'd be that interested.
I mean, unfortunately, I think... I mean, I say this as a guess. I don't know. Maybe I'll be wrong. It's going to lose a lot of its power if you can't actually feature any of these characters. You know, if it's all like vague superheroes in random suits like you see so far, despite the fact that we're mentioning actual superheroes, it's going to lose a lot of its impact for me.
I'm not worried about that part. I think that has to be part of the plan from the beginning, and you know, like you said, like doing analogs of these characters or you know, hinting at them is fine. It's almost like that they're there in the background is more important than anything else, as opposed to like a thing where the Studio 60 thing where they're talking about how funny all the sketches are and then they aren't, you know, like that. I don't know. There's a real fine line of show don't tell and vice versa with this, but I'm sure he can do it. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if this is a thing he can pull off. That's really where I'm at right now. Rather than I'm into it, I want to see like the mechanics of it, which is not what he wants to be going for, I don't think.
And we should mention Jeff Shaw, who's his like, you know, collaborator. He did God Country with him, and he did some of those Marvel books. Was it the Thanos book?
Yep.
He's terrific.
I mean, like the reveal of the little girl with the face. Yep. I was like, yes. It was literally talking to me in my language. I was like, that's a really interesting thing I haven't seen. And just the aesthetic of those images, I thought was fantastic. So like, again, it's good stuff in there. I don't know that I'm in love.
So are you going to, I assume you're going to read more of that.
I am. Yeah, I am. We'll see if it's academic or passionate. We'll see which way it goes.
So let's do ratings. God Country crossover. Number one ratings.
This is tough.
Out of five. Yeah, it is tough.
3.5.
3.75.
There you go.
Sticking with it, yes.
Yep.
Although, like you, a little skepticism.
Is it ongoing?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know how long it's going. It goes as long as anything goes.
Like Image ongoing, then. Like it doesn't say it, six.
It doesn't say like 1 of 5 or anything. It's just going to go until either it finishes or just never stops coming out, like all Image books. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go to add a book to the rundown. Any patron can vote, but if you give it the $5 or higher level, you can get your own superpower live on the show, as we're going to give today to two people who are a voting block for the patron pick. They always vote together. And so they always, you know, they can always be counted on for two votes from them. Josh is going to kick it off.
Emmett Golden Marks, a very shiny communist, can count instantly.
Count instantly.
Yeah, like, so if you look at the jelly beans in the jar, or I don't know, a stack of official paperwork, they'll tell you instantly what that is. You never, like, he's not allowed to play the jelly bean jar counting game to win a prize at the fair, because they know he can do it with 100% accuracy. And if he could be sent around the country in a...
For all your counting needs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he's... Yeah. Oh, no. The count of Sesame Street's got nothing on this guy.
And it has to be a visual, like a visual count. Like he has to look at a thing and he can count that thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like he couldn't look at a computer and count the bits. Like it has to be.
But you're saying he can look at, let's say, a stack of papers and count them. But yeah, he could count... What you're saying is he could count the number of papers, not necessarily what's written on those papers.
That's a good point. So... they would have to be face up, and then it would be a dot counting thing.
So you're saying,
or
if he saw the marks, he could instantly count. Like he'd have to be able to see them all laid out.
But maybe what would be more appropriate would be if you made a stack of each, like say for example that there were two different things that you were looking for on those particular documents. Like one had one choice, and the
four
other had
four.
Sure, that works that way too. And you put them into stacks. So everyone who had marked, I don't know, let's say the red box, and then everybody who marked, we'll say the blue box, just for instance.
Right. Sure.
If you just color. You just put those into two stacks,
right?
And then he would tell you, oh, there's this many. I think it was blue. I said,
yeah, I think
yeah,
it was blue.
Right. There's this many blue, and then this many red.
I think it was red.
But it's counting.
Okay. So you can. Very specific counting power. Good luck sorting that one out, Chris. I feel kind of bad about this power, but it made me laugh in my head, so I'm just going to go with it. We don't like to have the powers based on the names. It's a cheap way out. You know, other people in the powers game do that. We don't. We try to elevate our powers game. But Jesse,
who's in the powers game?
Jesse Golden Marks can turn into any member of the Marx Brothers.
See, I think it's very interesting that I immediately went to the father of communism, Karl Marx, and you went to the people who made duck soup. And
Beppo.
They Beppo?
Groucho.
Yeah.
Harpo. Chico.
Was there a Chico?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, you're right.
Chico was the Italian one.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I've never seen a Marx Brothers movie.
Ever?
And I feel bad about it. Like, it's always like, I really got to do that sometime. I think it's like, I've never read War and Peace, but I probably should at some point. And it isn't, I don't like it. It isn't anything other than I haven't read it.
War and Peace. It was the only book I've ever been able to finish.
I have not been able to finish two books. Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance and the original Herbert Asbury, Gangs of New York. I was unable to finish that.
Oh, I finished that one. There's books I've stopped reading by choice. Like, this is terrible. As opposed to, I want to read this book. I cannot. Mm-hmm. No one needs to hear the story. I was 21, reading it on the subway to and from work every day, and literally falling asleep every time trying to read it.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'm a different person now. Maybe it'd be all right now, but I remember trying to read it at 21. Like, I should read War and Peace. And I was just like, on the subway every time.
I read some James Joyce around that same period, and I finished it, but I couldn't tell you a single thing about it. I read Dubliners and the other one. But it was very difficult.
Anyway, Jesse, you turn to the Marx Brothers whenever the situation calls for it, which is great because you could be Zeppo Marx, the suave, debonair, regular Marx brother, you know, if you needed to be a suave, debonair guy, but you could be the ultimate mime in Harpo Marx, or the ultimate madman in Groucho, or Chico, the criminal.
But also really, the Italian one is the criminal. The Italian one with the Spanish name.
They're all criminals.
I see. But, do you have a recommendation for which is the best Marx Brothers movie?
I mean, everyone says Duck Soup is the best. My favorite is A Night at the Opera. It's the one I watched the most as a kid.
Uh-huh.
You really can't go wrong with Duck Soup or A Night at the Opera. They're not long movies. Well, I think one of their movies is like 70 minutes or something like that. But I'd be very curious to see what you think. It's not, you know, it's super vaudeville. They just took their vaudeville acts and they started doing the jokes on movie screens. So they're very specific humor.
My good friend and Eisner Award winning cartoonist Alex Robinson, notice I didn't mention anything about his podcasts, is a huge fan of Marx Brothers movies. And so
the verbal dexterity and the nonstop jokes and the physical comedy. They were incredible. We talk about this all the time and we're totally derailing and probably killing now the email segment. But they were that generation of entertainers that could do everything. They could sing, they could dance, they could tell jokes, they could do pratfalls, they did everything. You had to be able to do everything in the vaudeville circuit. So it's not like actors today who just can act really well. It's like they could all play musical instruments expertly, they could all sing, you know, they could do physical comedy, they could do verbal comedy. So it was like they were like sort of the ultimate
for that. And to be fair, this isn't a thing like I didn't want to watch it because it's old or whatever. I mean, like if you could watch a Chaplin movie right now and you will be on the floor. Like it's that funny. So I've no doubt that it'll be good. I just haven't done it, so I will do it.
And it's also very specific. It's vaudeville. It's vaudeville.
Vaudeville.
So, you know, it's very broad. Yeah. I'll be curious to see what you think.
All right.
There's always singing in it, and there's always, you know. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. Anyway, Emmett and Jesse, thanks for being patrons. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and give the $5 higher level and get your superpower. Or sometimes you hear us talk about other things.
I mean, I do want to point out, though, that there was no metaphor implied in that counting power. I just don't want people to think that it's related to anything. It was just all those things I said were random.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, patrons from whom they make that pick and they get those powers, that happens when a listener to the show who loves sometimes a listener in a podcast love each other very much, and they go to patreon.com/ifanboy, and you say, hey, I like what you do. I'd like to help contribute to the general fund. We're going to start sending out emails. Hey, friend.
The general fund. Yeah, we should start doing that, actually. Yeah. Every 5 minutes.
Yep. stop still getting them. And you want to support the show. You want to you like what we do, and you want it to keep going. And so you go there at the level with which you feel comfortable. We say it every week, but I cannot emphasize enough how much we appreciate it, and thank you so much. If more people want to come and do that, then there are more stretch goals to be reached. G.I. Joe Corner would be the next show that we would develop and come up with.
And
then after that, we would promise you the quarterly barbecue show in whatever way that the world allows us to do that when that happens.
Right. I mean, we can't do it like we'd want to do it. We do it the best way we can.
Yes.
Until things are different.
I will tell you, it would be difficult to set up a propane grill in my office where the recording equipment is. But, you know, these are problems we need to solve.
You'd have to use your phone outside.
Aging hipster podcaster dies of asphyxiation.
Yeah. This means really,
it's so good.
Just the loud sound of your forehead hitting the desk.
Meat dribbling out of my mouth.
He died happy, though.
Ron moving along with the show.
Yeah, we finished the show, obviously. We're professionals.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. There's also the t-shirt and sundries store over at ifanboy.threadless.com. There are 8 designs there. There's the Stay Home and Read Comics shirt, which is ironic, which oddly still relevant at this point, and I'm sorry about that.
I have to say I'm really happy to report that several people on the Discord channel said that they wore the Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters shirt to go vote.
I think
now, do I necessarily agree with that nihilistic view of the world right now? I don't know, but I appreciate the effort.
Right.
I made the shirt. It was my phrase, but you know, it's the shirt for our times, no matter what happens, apparently.
Definitely. You don't want to deal with any of that rigmarole, get over to ifanboy.com/support. You'll find a direct donation link for PayPal. And then finally, if you, like me, are strongly relying on people bringing things to your house to find joy, you can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, where you will find links to buy the books from the Booksplodes and a general link to Amazon to see if stuff can make you happy, or just to get garbage bags and dog meds. That's also good for that, too, if you don't want to go into stores because people are savages. Stay indoors.
So are we skipping email and going right to the end, or what's happening? You're the producer.
I think we should save this. I think that okay, that question, this. Yeah, we're going, yeah.
We went long on the book talk.
Yeah, right. So which is you know, probably preferable. Go to
contact@ifanboy.com. Sorry, I didn't know if you were going there or not. We've lost control of the show. Contact@ifanboy.com.
Well, it's correct to assume that I would not do the thing I'm supposed to do. Contact@ifanboy.com.
You do.
There's contact@ifanboy.com. So listen, there's a lot of special edition podcasts over the last month and a lot more coming. Talksplode with Gene Lu and Yang came out early in October. I will probably not mention it again. Then Connor and I did a Booksplode on Pulp, the animated Brain Trust story on Batman, Death in the Family, and our last media splode on Ted Lasso and West Wing and the West Wing special, Beacons in the Darkness. Is what I will say about those things. I will need to
schedule.
It makes
me so happy to see the people talking about checking out Ted Lasso based on the show and saying the same exact thing.
Everybody. Yeah, like Lindsay, my darling wife, we watched like the first one and she's like, I don't care what this is. And I was like, I went back and I was like, you need to watch it, which meant I got to watch it again too. And it was the same thing. She's at the end. She's like, it was just perfect. And I was like, I know. So everybody out there needs to get on that. It's Coach Taylor, but in England and funny.
So this month in November, we are 1 month into November. And this month, we're 1 week into. It feels like it's been a month into November.
Sure.
We are a week into November, and we're still going to get you a Talksplode. Right?
I mean,
a Talksplode.
There will be a Talksplode. Between now, I really feel like I just got that last one finished and it kind of snuck up on me. There will be one.
I think it wasn't that one late.
It was like the very first or second day of October. It was only because of scheduling. Actually,
that's why it feels like it, because it's only
right.
Been a
month, it was but. Late because I wanted to watch the first debate. I had to move the show back 2 days.
So, anyway, there'll be a Talksplode this month, supposedly. There'll be a hangout this month, supposedly, and there'll be a media splode this month, supposedly. We haven't scheduled any of those things. They will all happen.
At this point in the year, they might get spread out over time a little bit. I think it's fair to say.
The hangout will probably happen sooner rather than later. because we got to do it before the holidays, and I don't know about the media split. That's going to be tough. These will all come out. It's just a matter of figuring out when
yep.
they will come out.
But we've never not delivered a show. That'll happen.
The December books blow is actually already in the can, so that one's definitely coming out. Nice. So you'll get those. You'll get all the shows contractually obligated to you through the patrons. Head over to iFanboy.com to find all of our podcasts. Find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking Facebook.com/iFanboy or following at iFanboy on Twitter, iFanboy Comics on Instagram, which also features the best week in panels. And individually, we are CS Kill Patrick on Instagram and Jay Flanagan of Instagram. He is no longer on any other social platform. So
That's
if you
right.
want to find Josh, he's only on Instagram.
That's right.
Also, subscribe to our YouTube page, youtube.com/iFanboy. You keep up to date with the old video show uploads. And this past week was a good one. We had our very first interview with Stan Lee at New York Comic Con. It was mini episode interview. And then we had a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen show, which is appropriate for the passing of Sean Connery, the movie that killed his career. And then, well, it's not about the movies, but the book. But and then one of my favorite shows we ever did, might be the best one we ever did, the DC Cities / Marvel Comics Guide to New York City show, where we had half the show was a quiz about DC Cities. We did a game show, which Ron did very badly. And then we went out into the field with the Marvel Comics Guide to New York City and checked out the real places in New York that inspired the places in the comics. And it was one of the funniest shows we did. The extended, indulgent blooper reel at the end, which you see how difficult it is to shoot live in New York City without a permit, was a lot of fun. So that's one of my favorites. If you've never watched the show before, I would urge you to go to the YouTube page, youtube.com/iFanboy, and check out the latest episode, the DC Cities Marvel Comics Guide to New York episode. It was one of my favorites.
I'm going to watch that.
It's very fun.
If you like this show, you like what we do, write a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts, which really is pretty much the only place to do that. But you may feel free to download it wherever you'd like. But if you're part of that system, that always helps. Better yet, tell your friends about it if you're still using social media, which I probably shouldn't. I hate social media right now, so I'm going to go back on that. But if you're using it and you want to tell people about it, that is awesome. We appreciate the people who do. Spread the iFanboy word. That would be the best thing for folks to do. And I'm saying do things for us. Is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'm saying come in, send money, buy things.
Spirit of the holidays.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, who's giving you more than us? Who gives you more than us? There's a Jim Gaffigan.
We give and we give and we give.
There's a Jim Gaffigan joke where he says something like, "Has your mother ever cooked anything better than a McDonald's French fry?" And I feel like I relate that to, you know, like, has anybody spent as much time with you and made you laugh more than us? No, I don't think so. Well, you know what? Probably. Actually, it's very likely.
If your mother dumped half a pound of salt on everything, then it would taste as good as a McDonald's French fry.
Listen, you can claim to love America, but what you're saying doesn't back it up. You got to accept it part and parcel.
I'm just saying it's hot, it's potato, and it's got a pound of salt on it. Of course it tastes good.
Well, yeah.
I'm not saying it doesn't taste good. I'm saying there's reasons why.
Well, right. Are we better than... If one is a McDonald's French fry...
If one is Electro and one is also McDonald's French fry,
right? Is iFanboy a 10 or a 0?
I'm not prepared to say that. Well, this is a whole other podcast until we do Food Splode. Food.
Should we end this? Do you want to say, say your name?
Oh, yeah, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Stay safe, stay indoors, wash your hands. Please, dear God, wear your mask. Do the things you're supposed to. 6 feet is 6 feet. Help. We're the only people who can help, because nobody else is going to help us. We have to help each other. Not even a joke.